Anywho, chapter 24, I believe, the last chapter of 2 Samuel. Dude, I gotta get me one of them. If you're not allowed to do dishes or laundry, it works out really well.
TV either.
Oh, I'm done.
Yeah.
Hey, what do you do? What will happen if you do?
Well, it just won't heal as fast. Because
right.
Essentially how it works is like when one part of your brain is injured, the rest of your brain tries to fix it. But if you're using that other part of your brain, nothing tries to fix it.
Oh, okay. All right. It's busy.
You have to stare off into space.
Yeah. Go for a walk.
We'll skip tomorrow. We'll see how you're at the end of the week. I'll go Friday if you're not better, and if you are better.
No, I mean, that sort of thing.
We'll just give it a day or two. Right. I mean, I think that's wise. All right, because we need to see. I definitely want to see Jane, and I want to go see Alma. You haven't been out that way. I'll show you where they are. Okay. All righty. Anyway, for the rest of you, chapter 24. Now again, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. And it incited David against them to say, go number Israel and Judah. The anger of the Lord burned, and it incited David to do something wrong. This is a tough one. Now, let me, somewhere in here I have the, okay, here's the Chronicles version of that first line. Remember, it's a mere sight. Then Satan stood up against Israel and moved David to number Israel. That's what this says. If you want to get a sort of a feel for what's going on here, go to the book of Job and read the first couple chapters. The dynamics of what's going on there, Satan and God having a conversation about Job, God always wanting something deeper than what the conversation is. There's a subplot. There's what's going on between God and Satan, and then there's what God wants from Job. So he's actually fighting, not fighting, he's doing two tasks at once. Taking care of Satan, and then getting Job against me. But there are times, and we also see this in when Paul said, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger from Satan, from God. That's like three times that I know of where the same thing comes up. God will do whatever God knows needs to be done any way he wants to do it, by any means. And I think he gets a certain pleasure out of having his will done through Satan. That's how I view this. It's just like Satan has his agenda, and God just turns him loose, but is getting his agenda out of it. And what's happening here is numbering Israel, taking a census, is forbidden. Now, there were times when God ordered it. When God says take a census, you go take a census. And it usually had to do with war. Also, when a census was taken, they were supposed to have a tax. Every time they take the census, everybody was supposed to chip in. It was just across the board for an offering. In other words, what you're doing is, it's like a praise offering. Remember I talked about what offerings are? Those are what you give your wife. Tithes are what you give the government. You know, if your wife's mad at you, you give her an offering. If you really just love her, you give her an offering. But the government just wants its taxes. That's the difference. Well, these are offerings. He says, you shall take the atonement money from the... Okay. From Exodus 30, when you take a census of the sons of Israel to number them, then each one of them shall give a ransom for himself to the Lord. When you number them, so that there will be no plague among you, among them when you number them. It's interesting that it says that, because what happens here is a plague. So, I don't know if I'm stretching it too far. Here it is. You figure it out. I mean, this is what everyone who is numbered shall give. Half a shekel according to the shekel of the sanctuary. Shekels 20. Okay. Everyone who is numbered from 20 years old and over shall give a contribution to the Lord. The rich shall not pay more than the poor, and the poor shall not pay less than a half a shekel. When you give the contribution of the Lord to make atonement for yourself, you shall make atonement, take the atonement money from the sons of Israel and shall give it to the service of the tent of meetings. In other words, this is another way they finance their church. And I'll just use the church, word church as what we use. The temple, the priest, the Levite, all that stuff. that it may be a memorial for the sons of Israel before the Lord to make atonement for yourselves. I believe that when Jesus and Peter were confronted, and when Peter was confronted and says, "Don't you pay taxes?" And Jesus said, "Go throw a line in the water, and when you catch a fish, there will be a coin in the mouth." This is the tax they were paying, I believe. I believe that's the tax. It's the same amount. They were taking a census, and a tax was due, and Jesus said, "Well, let's go catch a fish," and from there. Okay, so we have the anger of the Lord burned, and the other one says Satan stood up. So if you put them together, you have a lot of what happened in the book of Job, and you also have a little of what happens in the book of Corinthians, where he says, "A thorn in the flesh, a messenger from Satan, was given to me by God." They're not mutually exclusive, which is strange for us. God has no issue with it. He'll use whatever means he wants.
So when it says that anger burned from God in the first version, would that be like from the prophet that would come and tell him, or would it be like the crops didn't do well? Or how would they have known that?
This is retrospect.
Oh, okay.
This happened before, and then after the prophet speaks to them, they know what's going on. So when they wrote this down, when this was written down, this is after the event's over, and now we know what happened. It never tells us why the anger burned, what they did. Most people believe it still goes back to the Saul thing in the Gibeonites, that they broke the vow and that they tried to wipe out the Gibeonites. There could be other things. There's quite a few things. There's a myriad of things it could have been. We don't need to know. Neither of these accounts tell us why they had done something they shouldn't have done. And it's so we'll pick up on verse 2. The king said to Joab, the commander of the army who was with him, "Go now through the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba," which is the furthest north and south. Okay. "And register the people that I," and here's the point, "that I may know the number of the people." It's not saying God said have a census. I want a census. And there was a prohibition on that. "But Joab said to the king, 'Now may the Lord your God add to the people 100 times as many as they are, while the eyes of the Lord and the king still see.'" Obviously, David is old. Well, he's 70. "But why does my lord the king delight in this thing? Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab and against the commanders of the army. So Joab and the commanders of the army went out from the presence of the king to register the people of Israel." Now, what the Chronicles version says, "Joab said, 'May the Lord add to his people 100 times as many as they are. But may the Lord the king, are they not all the Lord's servants? Why does my lord seek such a thing? Why should he be a cause of guilt to Israel?'" This is Joab talking. This is the dude that just has no scruples whatsoever. I mean, anybody he doesn't like, he kills them, doesn't obey the king, and he knows this is a bad idea. And to his credit, he stands up to the king and says, "You shouldn't do this," which is a hard thing to do, unless you're Joab. I mean, I guess when you're in charge of the army, you can get away with this. Why should you be the cause of guilt to Israel? Let's go back to Judges and even early Samuel, 1 Samuel, where the people were clamoring for a king and they were warned, "You don't want a king. As he goes, you'll go." Well, here it comes. That's okay. That's what they said. We'll live with that. Okay. "Nevertheless, the king's words prevailed against Joab and against the commanders of his army." So apparently, it wasn't just Joab. It was all the people he was sending out. The army is who he was sending out to do the numbering. And nobody in the army wanted to do this. Everybody thought this was a bad idea. "So Joab and the commanders of the army went off from the presence of the king to register the people of Israel. They crossed the Jordan and camped at Aroer on the side of the city that was in the middle of the valley of Gad towards Jazer. They came to Gilead and the land of Tamath Hodshi, and they came," yeah, we're there too. "They came to the fortress of Tyre and to all the cities of the Hivites and the Canaanites. They went out to the south of Judah and Beersheba. When they had gone through the whole land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days." So it's almost a year that the army went out and did this. And Joab gave the number of registrations of the people to the king. There were in Israel 800,000 valiant men who drew the sword, and the men of Judah were 500,000 men. Over on the other one, the numbers do not come out the same. Not sure why. Written later, written by someone else, there's a couple of things. And it said, in Israel there were 1,100,000 men who drew the sword. In Judah there was 470,000. It sort of comes a little more here, a little less there, whatever. But it says, but he did not number Levi and Benjamin among them, for the king's command was abhorrent to Joab. So he left two tribes out. He didn't even number them. And that's in the Chronicles account. That's how much he thought he shouldn't do this. Now, Levi, the tribes of the priest, maybe I could understand that, why he wouldn't do that, especially, you know, I'm not going to do this thing, and I'm surely not going to go number the priest, because I shouldn't be doing this at all. Benjamin, I don't understand it. If you guys remember what happened in Benjamin, I think I told it to you once or twice before. Before the book of Samuel, one of the last things that happens in the book of Judges is Benjamin gets the men of Benjamin are almost totally wiped out by the other tribes because they had done something just abhorrent. They just, you know, just a horrible thing. And there, so much so that there were only a few left. And this is where Saul comes from. And so maybe that's another reason. Maybe Benjamin isn't built up to this point yet. But, and not only that, Benjamin is still a thorn in David's side. Maybe he didn't want to go hit the hornet's nest, give them a reason to get mad, because everybody knows this is wrong. Okay, everybody but David. Okay. 10. This is the difference between David and Saul. Now David's heart troubled him after he had numbered the people. So David said to the Lord, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now, O Lord, please take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have acted very foolishly. When David arose in the morning, the word of the Lord came to the prophet Gad, David's seer, saying, go and speak to David. Thus the Lord said, I am offering you three things. Choose for yourself one of them, which I will do to you. And I think that's pretty much what the... In the Chronicles version, David said to God, I have sinned greatly in that I have done this thing, but now please take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have been very foolish. Pretty much the same thing. And he says to him, so Gad came to David, told him, says, shall 7 years of famine come to you in your land? Now remember, they had just had 3 years of famine because what had happened with the Gibeonites. So that's not a very attractive thing. Or will you flee 3 months before your foes while they pursue you? Or shall there be 3 days of pestilence in your land? Now consider and see what answer I shall return to him who sent me. Okay, so Gad shows up and says, here's your choices. Okay, and David said to Gad, I'm in great distress. Let us now fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercies are great. But do not let me fall into the hands of man. So what David says is, give me the 3 days. God is gracious, and we'll see that he is. David makes the right choice. I don't want to fall into the hands of the Philistines or anybody else because they don't love me. you know what I mean? And it says, so the Lord sent a pestilence upon Israel from the morning until the appointed time, and 70,000 men of the people of Dan to Beersheba died. That's a lot of dead people. When the angel stretched out his hand towards Jerusalem to destroy it, the Lord relented from the calamity and said to the angel who destroyed the people, it is enough. Now relax your hand. And the angel of the Lord is by the threshing floor of Araunah, the Jebusite. They give a different name for the same guy and the other ones. Then David spoke to the Lord when he saw the angel who was striking down the people and said, behold, it is I who sinned, and it is I who have done wrong, but these sheep, what have they done? Please let your hand be against me and against my father's house. Once again, this is David. David really cares about his people. We could see this throughout the entire, all the mourning. Remember when the priest that gave him Goliath's sword, Saul caught up with him and killed every one of them, killed their families, and just because they helped David, and how that affected David emotionally, how distraught David was. You know, these things matter to David. The people matter to David. That's what makes David who he is. I think the Chronicles says it a little different. It said, and God sent an angel to Jerusalem to destroy it. But as he was about to destroy it, because the end of Bathsheba had been hit, 70,000 are dead. What's left is Jerusalem. Apparently the angel is visible, at least to David, and also to the guy who owns the land. But as he was about to destroy it, the Lord saw and was sorry over the calamity, and said to the destroying angel, it is enough, now relax your hand. Now the angel of the Lord was standing on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. Obviously the same guy. It's just like somebody having a nickname or a family name, but it's obviously the same place. It's the same threshing floor, and he's a Jebusite. David said to God, is it not I who commanded the count of the people? Indeed, I am the one who sinned and done very wickedly. This gives us a little better depth of his own recognition of what I've done. You know, it wasn't just like, oops, sorry. I mean, he gets it. But these sheep, what have they done? O Lord, please let your hand be against me and my father's household, not against your people, that they should be plagued. Then the angel of the Lord commanded Gad to say to David that David should go up and build an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor on the wood. Okay. So Gad came to David and said, go up and erect an altar on the threshing floor. David went up according to the word of Gad, just as the Lord had commanded. Arunah looked down and saw the king and his servant crossing towards him. And Arunah went out and bowed his face to the ground before the king. Then Arunah said, why has my lord the king come to his servant? And David said, to buy the threshing floor from you, in order to build an altar to the Lord, that the plague may be held back from the people. And Arunah said to David, let my lord take the king take and offer up what is good in his sight. Look, the oxen for burnt offering, the threshing sledges, and the yokes of the offering for wood. Everything, O king, Arunah said to the king, Arunah gives to the king. Arunah said to the king, may the Lord your God accept you. So he goes up to this guy and he says to him, I'm going to build an altar here. And the guy says, well, here's my oxen. Here's the wood. Here's the yoke. Here's all that. Go ahead. Take them. And we talked about this Sunday. And however, the king said to Arunah, no, I will surely buy it from you for a price, for I will not offer burnt offerings to the Lord my God, which cost me nothing. So David bought the threshing floor and oxen for 50 shekels of silver, which is a little different over here because it's kind of interesting. Now Ornan turned back and saw the angel of the Lord and his four sons who were with him, and then he hid himself. And Ornan was on the threshing floor. So he sees this angel of death also, him and his sons. And it says the price is different, and I didn't actually look up why. I just found it interesting. Usually there's an explanation. It says, so David gave Ornan 600 shekels of gold by weight for the site. The other says 50 shekels of silver. I don't know if it, you know, all of it, part of it. And he called the Lord, and he answered him. And at this part says, with fire from heaven on the altar of the burnt offerings. That happens one other time. I think it's Isaiah, when he has the prophets, the false prophets, and there's a little song, send down the fire. So what this is saying is David offered up sacrifice. He didn't have to, the fire came down from Chronicles, the Chronicles account, and lets us know that God consumed it. And the Lord commanded the angel, and he put his sword back in his sheath. At that time, oh, by the way, for anybody that sees such a thing, it's quite an experience. When I think it was Elijah who did it against the false prophets, it was a showdown in front of everybody. Well, of course, everybody's looking now. Everybody was there. He called everybody out. He called out all the false prophets. He said, just be me. You get your, how many? You know, I think it was like 70 of them. And you go ahead and you put your offering out before your God. And I'll just stand over here and I'll put mine. And he pours water on his. And they're over there. They're acting up day and night. They're cutting themselves and nothing happens. Elijah walks up and says, eh. And poof. I mean, and so all those guys were killed. This is big stuff. This, and I don't know why it's not in both, but it's interesting that God himself, and what it tells you is, God accepts it. That's what it's telling you. Okay. At that time, and this is how the Chronicles finishes it. At that time, David saw the Lord had answered him in the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. He offered the sacrifice there. From the tabernacle of the Lord, which Moses had made in the wilderness, the altar of the burnt offering were in a high place at Gibeon at that time. Now, they're supposed to do offerings at the tabernacle. Remember when I said the whole purpose of their church service was for offerings? That's what it revolved around. He didn't go there because he was scared. It says, but David could not go before it to inquire of God, for he was terrified by the sword of the angel of the Lord. What it's saying is between him and where he should have done this, the angel of the Lord is standing. He's recognizing, I should have went there, but I was scared, is basically what he's saying. And that is how 2 Samuel ends. Now, before we start 1 Kings, which it just rolls right into it, there's this little period in between that isn't really mentioned anywhere, but except, once again, 1 Chronicles. And this is what David does between the two. 1 Chronicles 22. Then David said, "This is the house of the Lord God, and this is the altar of burnt offering for Israel." So David gave orders to gather the foreigners who were in the land of Israel and set stone cutters out to hew the stones to build the house of God. Remember, David is not allowed to build the temple. He was told specifically. So what David is doing is everything he can, but he's getting craftsmen in. He's getting them started. He's getting this whole huge public works project rolling. He's financing it. He's bringing in the people who do it. David prepared large quantities of iron to make the nails for the doors of the gates and for the clamps, and bronze, and more bronze than could be weighed. And the timbers and cedar logs beyond number. For the Sidonians and the Tyrians brought large quantities of cedar timber to David. David said, "My son Solomon is young and inexperienced, and the house that is to be built for the Lord shall be exceedingly magnificent, famous and glorious throughout all lands. Therefore, I will make preparation for it." So David made ample preparations before his death. Then he called his son Solomon and charged him to build a house for the Lord God of Israel. David said to Solomon, "My son, I intended to build a house to the name of the Lord my God. But the word of the Lord came to me, saying, 'You have shed much blood and have waged great wars. You shall not build a house to my name, because you have shed so much blood on the earth before me.'" And once again, I will tell you, almost all of it was shed because he was told to. Don't matter. This is where you just say, "Okay, Lord," this is where you don't whine. You know, if you always felt there was something that you always wanted to do and the Lord, and you don't get to do it, let it go. Let God do what he does. David doesn't want you. He says, "Okay," is what he says. It's something he wanted to do so passionately. And God tells him, "You can't do it because you shed blood." And there's none of this, "Well, you're the one that told me to shed it." You know, none of that. It's just, "Okay, Lord, whatever you want." Which is why David was picked once again. And by now, we should have plenty of reasons why God picked David. "Behold, a son will be born to you who shall be a man of rest. And I will give him rest from all of his enemies on every side, for his name shall be Solomon, and I will give peace and quiet to Israel in his days." So what he's saying is, your son's going to do it, and he's going to have the ability to do it, because he's not going to have to fight wars. Basically, he's just going to have peace. When you consider that David's entire life, what did he have, maybe 10 years of peace spaced out of 70? If you added them together, his entire... probably not even that. You know, if you go to the point where we pick up with him tending the sheep on, it may be 5 years of just where he could just, where somebody's not trying to kill him. His own family, his own king, you know, just, okay. "He shall build a house for my name, and he shall be my son, and I will be his father, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom over Israel forever." Once again, carrying on the promise made to David. "Now, my son, the Lord will be with you, then you may be successful and build the house of the Lord your God, just as he had spoken concerning you. Only the Lord give you discretion and understanding and give you charge over Israel so that you may keep the Lord your God. It's interesting because we will see what David, the blessing that David gives Solomon is what this is. May the Lord give you discretion and understanding. Which is interesting because when God says to Solomon, what do you want from me? Solomon says, I want wisdom and understanding. And God said, because you've asked for this, I will give. So apparently he heeds his father's words and he understands the importance of it. It says, then you will prosper. If you are careful to observe the statutes and the ordinances which the Lord commanded Moses concerning Israel, be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be dismayed. Now behold, with great pains I prepared a house of the Lord, 100,000 talents of gold and 1 million talents of silver. I can't remember what a talent was, 20 pounds, something like that. And bronze and iron beyond weight. And they are great quantities. Also timbers and stones I prepared for you, and may be added to them. Moreover, there are many workmen with you, stone cutters and stone masons and carpenters, and all the men are skillful in every kind of work. Of gold and silver and bronze and iron there will be no limit. Arise, may the Lord be with you. David also commanded the leaders of Israel to help his son Solomon, saying, is not the Lord your God with you? And has he not given you rest on every side? And he has given the inhabitants of the land into my hand, and the land is subdued before the Lord and before his people. Now set your hearts and your soul to seek the Lord your God. Arise, therefore, and build the sanctuary of the Lord God, so that you may bring the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, the holy vessel of God, into the house that is to be built for the name of the Lord. This is what David does. We call it Solomon's Temple. It was pretty much financed. Everything was assembled. The workers were there. That's what Solomon inherited. Way to go, Pop. You know, really. And so he gets the temple named after him. Just a little bit on... Now we're going to 1 Kings. Now David was old, advanced in age, 70. And they covered him with clothes, but he could not keep warm. So his servant said to him, let them seek a young virgin for my lord, the king, and let her attend the king and become his nurse. And let her lie in your bosom, that may the Lord... the king may keep warm. So they searched for a beautiful girl through all the territory of Israel and found Abishag, the Shunammite, and brought her to the king. The girl was very beautiful, and she became the king's nurse and served him, but the king did not cohabit with her. When I'm cold, my wife throws me an afghan. He said, I'm chilly, and they went and looked through the entire country for the most beautiful young lady they could find. I don't know how being beautiful keeps you warm. I would think a girl with a little heft would keep you warmer. I'm just going, you know, I'm not saying. But, yeah. What have we learned every time we read the phrase, she was very beautiful? Bad things happen. This is no exception. By no fault of this young girl. She comes up a couple times after this. It is said that possibly she is the one that is being written about by Solomon in the Song of Solomon. It's also said by Jewish tradition that she was very beautiful. She was half as beautiful as Sarah. Would give you some idea of how beautiful Sarah was. I mean, Sarah's been gone a long time. Sarah is the standard of beauty. And she was very beautiful, and they say she was half as beautiful as Sarah, and people go, wow, that beautiful? Mm-hmm. Which give you an idea of how beautiful Sarah was supposed to be. Now, she comes up again, and the whole idea of this, okay, he does not cohabit with her. There's a reason. Well, first he's 70. Okay? You know, I don't know how many pharmaceuticals are floating around at that time, let's be honest. That's not really the point. The point is, by... not law, but by standard. For some reason, and I can't find it in a scripture, maybe it's in there, kings were supposed to have 18 wives, no more. You couldn't have more than 18. So if he slept with her, she would be number 19, and which can't be, so one of them would have to be booted. And David, he wasn't that kind of guy to go and do that. I mean, he was a pretty decent dude. Now Solomon blows this one out of the water. While Dad stuck to the 18, and I don't know where you randomly get a number of 18. Yeah, 18's okay, 19's horrible. I mean, I don't know how that happens. After one, I will just say it's a mistake. Anything more than one, you're asking for it. So, okay. Solomon had 1,000. I think it was 300 wives, 700 concubines. I don't even know how you keep track of that. So you're talking 1,000 mother-in-laws, 1,000 father-in-laws, 1,000 women who all want something, And we will see that he paid for that too. But this young lady shows up in the next chapter by no fault of her own, simply because she's beautiful. And we might as well address it now. There is this little problem. We're going to stop here because what happens is Adonijah, David's other son, decides this is my only chance to become king. And he does this whole spiel, and he almost pulls it off. But he gets stopped, and we'll pick this up next week. But there's a little spot where this girl shows up again. And after he is excused by Solomon, Solomon gives him a break. He goes to Bathsheba, Solomon's mother, Adonijah does, and says, go talk to Solomon and see if he'll let me marry Abishag. Solomon knows exactly what this means. She just sees it as, oh, okay, I'll go tell him. Solomon says, kill him. Because he knows that what he's trying to do is take something that was David's. Servants of a king could only go to royalty. You couldn't sell them to someone else. So what he's trying to do, and this poor girl is just keeping somebody warm, okay? And what she does after that, I'm not sure. I mean, she doesn't have an inheritance as a wife of the king or a concubine. She doesn't have that, but she's obviously taken care of. And I'm not sure if this is your little girl, and the neighbors ask, where's Abishag, and what's she doing with herself now? She's keeping the king warm. Apparently, that was actually an honor, whereas today it would, I don't get it. But apparently, something about body heat, he's just chilly. But it works out. But she comes up again, and somebody dies because of her. And all she did was, she was sitting there milking goats, and this crew comes up and says, come on, come to Jerusalem, kick the goat. Okay, and people are dying, conspiracies are flying, all because she's a beautiful girl. And boy, the lesson should be piling up here. So we'll leave off there. It gets really interesting. Now, after this gets ironed out, there are about 4 or 5 chapters of just detail. If you guys want to read those on your own, and because they're in there for a reason, but it's a hard read. It's just, and so they put 3 nails into the fourth board, and the fourth board, and it weighed 40 shekels. We can read that on our own and skip to the part where history starts happening again, if that would be okay with you. I think it would be advisable. But do read it. I mean, there's like 4 or 5 chapters of just temple detail.
Oh, this is involving the construction
of the temple. And his palace. And the palaces that he has to build for these 1,000 wives. And who's paying for this? Who's paying for his 1,000 wives in these temples? The people are.
The taxpayers.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. And remember what Solomon said. I mean, what Samuel said to the people. He's going to tax you. We don't care. Give us a king. And Solomon said, okay, if you don't care, I'll tax away. There's a beautiful picture in there of Solomon's temple. It's in there somewhere. It is quite extravagant. It was so extravagant, people invaded them constantly to come and take it. when you put gold on the walls, everybody knows, and everybody says, I'd go down there and get the gold off them walls. So it's kind of interesting. But yeah, the next couple chapters do, and this is a long chapter. I mean, this, what are there, 53 verses. We'll probably get through it next week, and there's a little bit more. But like I said, so read through, take a look at the details of the building of this temple. It is quite interesting. It is done as told. There's a glossary in the back that tells you where all that stuff is. And
But the temple starts in chapter 5.
Is that where it starts?
Yeah.
Okay. And there's about four or five. Also, I remember when I was looking over this, boy, there's like four or five chapters of details about his residence.
Administration.
Yeah, administration. Just stuff that really isn't history. It is just pure history. It's like reading Leviticus or Numbers. You know, he begot her and they begot them, and these are the names of the leaders of the tribe of Judah, and you're, okay, it's there for a reason, you need to know it, but it's a really hard read, especially out loud. You know, it's, okay. I'll have some harder numbers for where it'll actually pick back up again next time, okay? But like I said, look ahead, and it's there for a reason. Let's pray.